Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Are you ready to go? Because I'm ready to go.
My name is Eric 13. I am joined, as always, on Double Feature with Michael Kester.
Mm-hmm. Today we're gonna see what it's like when films collide. We're gonna do a couple of movies here on Double Feature.
Are we doing like a sci-fi B-movie Power Man 5000-esque Power Man 5000 reference?
No, I always feel like it's the most appropriate time to bury Power Man 5000 references is when you do the most ubiquitously viewed films in a pair that I think may have ever occurred on Double Feature.
Right, yeah. We want to clue people in. Let them know that this is always two films as interpreted by some Power Man 5000 fans.
Right, yeah. It's a dog whistle. It's a dog whistle underneath the Forrest Gump and Curious Case of Benjamin Button facade that next week we're already going to get right back into the pulp. And 2 weeks ago, we were saying some really nice things about Jaws 4.
Yeah, right. All over the map. But, you know, we still find as time goes on that we have not hit cinematic juggernauts.
Right.
I was actually kind of surprised when you said this last time on the show.
I know you actually went, have we not covered them?
Well, no, I think I said, is that real or
something? Which is a question, Eric, reserved for me.
Yeah, right. Right. So in fact, we are going to both cover and spoiler, Forrest Gump and the Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
We have on this show covered the facts in the case of Mr. Hollow, but not the Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Somehow that was the order we did those in. I don't know. It's an obscure short film reference from a 9-year-old episode of Double Feature. If this is your first Double Feature, I apologize. So there's going to be some spoilers. If you haven't heard the show, you don't have to start back 9 years ago or 11 years ago or whatever. You can start at Victor Crowley and The Endless from this year. We kind of started with a clean slate, and then we're just watching some midnight movies every week on the show. But if people are coming to this for the first time, we expect that everybody's seen the movies. And In today's show, I think that's probable.
Right.
As probable as ever.
I'm pretty sure I was the last person to be the one that had seen both of these movies.
Yeah, right. It's not always us who have seen them, you know, back when they came out, but at least by the time the show airs. And we run a pretty indulgent show here. Try to pretend every week, at the very least, that the two movies on the show are the greatest movies ever made and fully indulge what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
With, I just feel like we haven't said this in a while.
Sure.
With no sort of review, no sort of evaluation.
Right.
All of that tends to bore you and I. So we just want to see what the movies are talking about.
In the greater scope of cinema, we could pick any movies we wanted. If we wanted to review movies, obviously we'd probably pick the new ones, or we'd pick, you know, some other such type niche genre. But in reality, we have chosen these films. They have not chosen us. You can choose them. We'll tell you how to do that in a second. But so we've already picked these films for a reason, and we're not going to discuss thumbs or stars or tomatoes. We will discuss the reason we put these two films next to each other.
We would only discuss tomatoes if it's part of the theme of the episode.
Right, which we've already ruined that tomato palooza, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. Ill foresight, is that what that's called? We fucked up. I guess that's just what it is.
Yeah,
we fucked up. Yeah, you were referencing the sometimes when the listeners will pick the double features, And we do have some of those coming up. I am looking at this right now. I know after last week's catastrophe on iPads that we couldn't get all of the business working and I couldn't find our executive producer list. So thank you for none of our executive producers sending us hate mail over that. But we are officially $20 away from hitting this Patreon goal.
Ooh.
Yeah. So if you want to get in on that.
That's less than the price of your morning coffee.
That's, yeah, just always say that. That's the price of one Lady Gaga song, $20. I know how commerce works. Yeah. So you can go on patreon.com/doublefeature. And if somebody, just somebody out there just gives us $20, this problem will go away, at least for right now. That would be great. I'll just give everyone a minute to do that. Just anyone would be good. So why don't we start off? I want to start with Forrest Gump, obviously.
We had two options. We could start off at the beginning or we could start off at the end, work our way to the beginning, and then start at the beginning and work our way to the end. We're doing the opposite.
The real challenge of double feature today is that these two movies, I'm going to kind of give you a theme. With these two movies.
Is that it's a palindrome?
Well, is that these two movies have a very obvious top line look at the... I don't want to use the word gimmick because it sounds mean, but now I have. They have gimmicks. They're gimmick movies.
Sure.
There are also a lot of other things, which is surprising to me. But we could ignore, hey, look, Benjamin Button is like backwards and forwards and stuff. Or we could just lean into those kind of top-level things. And after just taking a minute to refresh the purpose of double feature as taking what movies want to do and running with them, I do think, fuck it. Let's just talk about the crazy things that these movies, what the super obvious top-line crazy, but here's what we're coming to do today type things.
Well, I think the main thing when I was putting these two movies together, in my mind... I had two things. So one is obviously that we're talking kind of about these, the lives of amazing people. But the thing that was important to me about this and the kind of the question that I intended to raise is why do movies like Forrest Gump and Benjamin Button only come out about fictional people? Are real people so fucking boring that you don't want to watch their life from birth to death?
Guys, listen closely because I'm about to tell Michael Kester about the biopic, an obscure genre of film he's never heard of.
No, but that's the thing is like even you know, a movie like that goes, he was born at a very young age, jump to 45 when he won that court case you've heard about.
Yeah, right. Well, it turns out no one does anything interesting when they're 8 years old. Maybe
unless they're fictional. Yeah. Right? In which case they do amazing things.
I would also hypothesize that when we get to the part of the biopic where the protagonist is 8, you mentally block that part out because you are fucking bored of watching children do boring things. Unless they're going to like find a dead body in the woods or something. Yeah. You don't care. You tune it out and you wait for their adolescent. You wait till all the kids discover sex.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, something interesting might happen.
Unless they're 8 years old and 80 or 8 years old and have Alzheimer's.
Foresty.
Foresty.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so Forrest Gump is also kind of exemplar. There's a curious case of Forrest Gump to me, which is that this movie came out in right 94. Like it was Zemeckis when he was swinging the biggest leagues he swung. It was when Zemeckis was making the biggest movies in planet Earth. And this movie came out and everybody saw it. And I think everybody, even now, I think if you talk to somebody about Forrest Gump, who's not you or I, who just watched it for the show, people go, I love that movie. It was so sweet. Life is like a box of chocolates. I feel like that movie has ingrained itself in society in such a strange way that people say they love it, and I don't know if anybody's ever watched it again.
Yeah, right. We hit on this every once in a while, and as we've covered more and more films, I really like to think about, you know, the movies that mattered to me the most are, even for us to talk about, not just for me personally, are the movies that could be someone's absolute favorite film.
Right.
And you wonder if somebody, and you know, well, to complete my thought, you wonder if somebody is hanging a Forrest Gump poster on their wall. You know, I'm wondering if there's a college dorm somewhere where people are like, let's get a six pack and watch Forrest Gump. Like, it just seems kind of weird. But that doesn't mean, it doesn't mean every film has to do that. In fact, Forrest Gump probably had a profound effect on, this might be the highest ratio of had a profound effect on people and lives over time, but people do not return to over and over.
Sure. And I think it's because it's a chain of iconography. I mean, as far as movies go, it's a movie that you can watch one time and you remember each scene as sort of a bite-sized thing.
It's set pieces almost.
Yeah,
I mean,
I guess
it's, I guess it's absolutely set pieces.
But it's also kind of cheating.
How do you mean?
Well, because it uses massive social events and just superimposes Forrest Gump. So instead of being like, do you remember that scene in Forrest Gump where it goes, do you remember human rights?
Yeah.
Forrest Gump was at that.
That's kind of
what
I meant.
Do you remember John Lennon? Forrest Gump was there.
That's what I meant about the top line thing is the most interesting thing to me that you could do to deconstruct Forrest Gump and take a very, very deep look at it is also a disservice to the movie, but you know, let's run the exercise because it might be interesting, is to remove those gimmicky portions, to remove the things that are really the big sales point of what a weird, oh, have you seen Forrest Gump? It's this movie about a guy who happened to be at these major events in history.
Right.
And if you were to remove that element of it and look at the pieces that are left, that's how you can see if this is necessarily more than a gimmick. You know, if you just think about, for instance, that character, and is there something about this character that you like or that makes this the right person to tell the story about? Or if you have another way of maybe removing that element, if you were to take anybody else and put them at those particular events, you know, how much more, I guess is what I'm getting to, is how much more is this movie than just going to those particular places?
Sure.
And I don't necessarily—
Is it a
necessarily,
chain of set pieces? Right.
Yeah, I don't know that, you know, there's nothing wrong with it being a— If the answer is there's nothing here to watch, if not that, that's also okay because the movie is not the movie minus the set pieces. The movie is a series of set pieces, the movie.
Sure.
And I do think that's a pretty strong idea just as both of these movies today, you know, their top line thing is also, could we get away with this in cinema?
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea. Can movies do this yet?
Yeah.
Which is a perfect Zemeckis idea, right? That's half of his fucking movies. Has the technology caught up with my dreams?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But that definitely captured people's imaginations. It made these movies blockbusters.
Sure.
And as a, you know, as a filmmaker, I'm also interested in that. I also do think that's cool just to go, I don't know, can we trick people with this? Can we do this in movies?
Right. And I think, I mean, I think I can answer a little bit of the question about the substance of this film outside of Robert Zemeckis proving that he did I Want to Hold Your Hand, or what was his Beatles movie? It was I Want to Hold Your Hand, right?
Across the Universe?
No.
Not the right.
No, hard pass.
La La Land. Is it La La Land?
Is it Metamorphosis?
That's A Star the, is Born. That was the name of the, no?
I think that that's when, I think you have two forces. When you're looking at Forrest Gump, I think the one you mentioned about the can we get away with this is this set piece after set piece. That's Zemeckis. I think when you're looking for the substance of the film less the set pieces, that's Hanks.
Yeah.
You know?
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
That you think of the lead actor as the person guarding the canonical substance of film.
Yeah.
Weird.
I mean, If Tom Hanks didn't really create a special character here, this movie, one, I mean, it would not be as beloved as it is, but two, it would be a series of set pieces, but I think you can argue, albeit much shorter, Forrest Gump could exist outside of his impact on history.
Yeah.
If it was about, you know, it'd be a little bit Hallmarkier, but it'd be a film about a boy, a soft-minded fellow who had a limp and then became a runner and had to be let down by the girl he thought he loved.
Yeah.
It'd be, you know, it'd be like, it'd be like a cool 78 minute film.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I don't know if that's, I mean, I know certainly that that is not a movie everybody then goes to. It doesn't have the hook.
Hanks or not. Yeah.
But
that's just Larry Crown.
I do think it still absolutely exists.
Sure.
And I guess that's part of what I was getting at too, is that the character that Tom Hanks plays, you know, just something about looking into his eyes, he's convinced, it's as if he's convinced as an actor that this is a story worth telling, but he can't be that way as a character, because as a character, it's, let me tell you about this time there was like kind of an accident.
Right.
You know, that's one of the truly amazing parts of Forrest Gump as a character, is that he finds these stories in his life. It's as if he's unaware that they are worth telling, but he knows enough to tell them to random strangers.
Sure, sure.
It's a little paradoxical in that sense.
Well, I think what's also kind of an interesting idea about that is that Forrest Gump has to be a story told from... It's similar to Benjamin Button, right? These movies don't work. Imagine, if you will, one man's life story, fictional, sure, but set in the year 2094.
All right.
Comes out this year, but it's set in 2094. And all the historical events that this character is a part of are things that haven't happened. And it becomes very disinteresting.
Yeah.
However, Forrest Gump is entirely fictional. It's basically fucking cameos of history.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is really, like, is that a cheap device or is it a genius move?
Yeah, well, the other thing that's funny about it is that you're not getting, if we were to just describe the movie that way, I feel like it doesn't get to the soul of this movie either, because if I told you today that I've got a movie about a man who happened to secretly be at all of these places throughout history, you would watch it, I assume I would watch it, trying to gain some secret knowledge about those events.
Sure, right.
You would go, oh, what insight could I learn about the real truths of history
by this guy? What if the camera's pointed behind the door?
Right.
Do we find out that, you know,
alternate
angles, D-Day only happened because, you know, he let the dog out?
Yeah, but that's really not what... Forrest Gump does talk a little bit, and Benjamin Button talks a whole lot about these sort of accidents that serendipitously lead to certain moments, the chain events, butterfly flappings that lead to one event or another. But I think I really do think Forrest Gump is a character story about one man. And I think it uses its hook just to get people into that.
Sure.
But I don't think it's telling us about history. And I also think, and this is one of my favorite things about the movies today, is they're art house movies that are also blockbusters. That's known as the secret genre of drama.
Right.
But what that means is you get a lot of popular interpretations of them.
Sure.
By people who perhaps are not used to looking at the deeper meaning of movies. And so they sort of implant their own thoughts and feelings on them. And you get to see that in a massive sea. Just try reading sometime what people think Forrest Gump is about. It's all over the place and it's hilarious.
One of the things that both of these movies have in common by being so much in the public eye is that the people at the reins, the auteur, the directors of these movies, right, who are controlling these films, are some of those directors that you and I... This is... Okay, so I'm trying to... So I always, always, always use Aronofsky to describe this. But when niche directors turn mainstream, they often lose a big part of what I think you and I, you know, give them their genre edge or their, you know, even Cronenberg, I think there's an arguable cleaning of the lines that went into him getting his Academy Award nominations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not that we hate those movies because they're some of my favorites, but I won't even accept an argument that Eastern Promises is as edgy as, you know, fucking Crash or...
Sure. Maybe as good, not as edgy, right?
Yes, right. Exactly. And I think that Robert Zemeckis and David Fincher are two directors who... I'm just going to say it. I don't think they lose their edge by going mainstream. I don't think that their edge really came from being subversive.
Yeah.
I think their edge came from the way the stories are told and the execution of vision. I mean, we've already talked about Robert Zemeckis is this cinematic juggernaut who he literally, so most people, maybe you don't know this, or maybe Alec Baldwin was written into this for you, but famously Robert Zemeckis took 2 or 3 years off filmmaking solely to work on cinematic 3D technology. He like started a 3D cinematography company.
Yeah.
Which
around here we call that the Will Barrett, but go on.
Yeah.
As a joke, literally no one gets.
And he,
it's fine.
He basically created this system whereby you can block your entire cinematic shots in a 3D space digitally and then plug that into your camera so that the camera will execute cinematographic shots exactly to the specifications of your digital vision. And mm-hmm. then he came back and made Flight was the film where he really executed that, following Beowulf, which was him kind of going, society's technology hasn't caught up to Zemeckis, and then he stopped.
right.
So that's where you get these giant ideas. And David Fincher is, you know, I said something at the top of the show, and I think David Fincher answers the question, because I said, why don't these films come out about normal human beings that exist that are non-fictional people, and why aren't they nearly as interesting? And I believe David Fincher made that film, and I feel like it's just as David Fincher as Fight Club. I feel like Fight Club is kind of the gold standard of Fincher to most people, but I don't know that there's a David Fincher film, honestly, that people haven't seen.
Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, Fincher's synonymous with I think the things that are truly in the popular mind synonymous with Fincher are high quality movie,
right?
You know,
it's the same as Christopher Nolan at this point. It's like, right, ooh, Christopher right. Nolan's coming out with a film, it must be better than most films,
right? Yeah. I mean, you can get a lot more specific with his movies, and I also think that overlooks, you know, it's funny to think about the careers of these directors too, and how I'm sure you and I both have.
I would love to watch a Forrest Gump style story about one of these two guys.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they have their things that are pretty universally seen as misses even. And yet they just persevere through those, you know, they are so well known. And I mean, I say that about Fincher especially, because I think, you know, when I was getting into film and trying to figure out what makes something look a certain way or feel a certain way, Fincher was somebody,
double feature movie.
Yeah, I mean, Fincher was somebody who I looked at so specifically because of that reason, because I went, well, what do I know about Fincher's style? And the first thing is just, well, he makes really good movies. Okay, well, there has to be more to this craft than that, right? So right. I think he's, you know, in the same way you say Christopher Nolan, I think there's probably, maybe from a different generation than me, or maybe just from people who are into another genre, but I think people probably study his movies in the same way. You know, people starting film school or people first getting into even from a critical perspective, people who want to look at movies a little bit deeper. You know, I said a whole bunch of really loaded, elitist, you know, snobbish stuff about the way people look at Forrest Gump, but I think it's cool that people are interpreting it in a lot of different ways and taking, and that you're seeing the first crack at that. I think Benjamin Button does a lot of the same. You know, you see people taking on something they know is heavier, and you can kind of in real time see people trying to work on that and go, oh this movie's God. Doing something. What's it doing? What's going on here?
Man, so if you on paper told me what Forrest Gump would be about, I would be like, that's ambitious, but I'm sure that can be done. If you told me on paper what Benjamin Button was about, I'd be like, why would you even attempt to make this a story that has a beginning and an end?
Yeah.
Because the pure idea, the fundamental questions that raise just by the basic premise of Benjamin Button, and I'll be honest, I didn't see Benjamin Button until a couple weeks ago for the first time. And here's why. You tell me the premise and I go, that can't possibly work.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Well, I go, what's the case? What is the eponymous case? People go, oh, he's born old, but he's a baby. And then he gets young, but becomes an old man. And I go, that is, there's no way that's functional for 3 straight hours. And Brad Pitt is in this.
I know. It's so fucking crazy. Well, and that's the other thing is that the movies especially this one, on the surface, they sort of dare you to take them at face value. They kind of dare you to go, hey, watch this and find anything in it except for yourself evaluating whether or not Brad Pitt truly looks young or old. You know, like that is a whole barrier it puts sure. up where it kind of crosses sure. its arms. And you have to get past that whole thing because it is literally enough to distract you for 3 hours to just mm-hmm. look at scene after scene and go, but how
is
old
he younger
does he look
yet?
Here?
Is yeah. he older yet?
How yeah. old is he in comparison to the other people? And that's a pretty amazing thing for a movie that has so much else going on. I feel like you could go, this is nuts. You could go through all 3 hours of Benjamin Button only paying attention to whether or not they accomplished scene per scene, the high level gimmick of the movie.
Right.
And then you could do another entire pass looking at none of that stuff and just evaluating the story of this person mm-hmm. or what that mechanic even, you could do different passes just on the mechanic. Like, okay, what does this say about age? Mm-hmm. If a person
That's
ages
the
in
real,
reverse,
yeah.
what happens? What do we learn from that?
And I think what's really cool about doing these two movies next to each other is you get sort of a palindrome of the human life.
Mm.
You know, you start young and then you get old and then you start old and you get young again. And you basically get to watch, you basically get to factor physical age out of the question and start looking at mental age. You look at experience as the accumulative thing as opposed to time.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the time Benjamin Button is, let's say, you know, 50, you're going, has he accomplished as much or more than Forrest?
Yeah.
And what were the preclusions there? What did he start too old and weird? And he, you know, you get into the minutiae of, was he old enough to have sex?
Yeah, right.
And
right.
that's the kind of, those are fucking, man, you want to talk about getting distracted. It's shit like that.
Those are the real double feature questions.
Yeah. You start going. Was he, you know, is sex determined by mental age or physical capability? Because yeah. if your body's old enough to get hard, does it matter how much human experience your mind has been under? It's very strange stuff. And I don't think we need to get into that because there's also an entire 3-hour film about a man who ages in reverse to talk about.
Well, what's crazy too about that is that the film has to kind of at the same time tackle these things and ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this whole, I mean, once he starts coming into puberty, he is at the worst age to be connecting with somebody at also simultaneously the worst age on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Like no picture could look more indefensible than a, you know, 60-year-old man trying to date a 12-year-old girl or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the movie has to, if it's going to really tell the story about his life, it has this minefield to step into where that's some of the most challenging and interesting stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it's also just so fucking weird. You can't dwell there right. for too long. Or
sure.
Just,
wait, are you talking about the film or are you talking about Tilda Swinton in anything?
Tilda Swinton's kind of made a career out of really doing a lot of this. Just like yeah. Tilda Swinton's the person coming out during Me Too and being like, no, I should be able to play trans people and men and old men and young women and just anything I want. You know, she's the person having the in the weeds conversation that is not right, right for a popular moment.
Yeah.
Which is like my heart.
Yeah.
Which is just
yeah,
like
no, exactly.
Which is my constant day-to-day struggle is I want to talk to people who watch 500 movies a year and they want to talk about 5 movies a year type issues.
Let me tell you something about my favorite thing about Tilda Swinton, and I hope it changes I hope it changes things for you because it has seriously enriched my life. It's not a surprise to double feature veterans or to you that I love, we both do. We love fucking weird movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this year come to realize that if I'm watching a weird movie and Tilda Swinton walks onto the screen, it's like a fucking lighthouse. I'm like, oh, thank God. It is a weird movie. It's not just me. If
that's wonderful,
you know, like, and it's anything. I mean, I'm watching Benjamin Button. I'm like, this is fucking weird. Like, do people know this is weird or am I just like picking up on something? And then it's Tilda Swinton walks onto the screen. I'm like, okay, no, okay. It's weird.
Someone got it.
It's weird. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Okay. I mean, and it can be as mainstream as fucking Doctor Strange. And if Tilda Swinton shows up, I go, this is weirder than people realize.
About to get weird. About to get weird. She is a treasure that I just, I mean, it's both amazing in her career.
Since Constantine, that, man.
Yeah, yeah, really. I mean, she was also the greatest parts of Constantine even. You know, Tilda Swinton is somebody who gets a lot of recognition and especially in the space of gender bending and androgyny and playing with a lot of, maybe even more taboo today than 20 years ago.
Sure.
Things. She both gets a ton of credit and also not nearly as much credit as the mountains she's moving,
mm-hmm.
you know, for what she's doing. I think a Tilda Swinton marathon could probably
Dude,
be
you're
as
reading
fulfilling
my mind.
As
a Tilda Swinton. I'm right
all
there.
Tilda Swinton year of double feature.
Yeah.
I'm into it. I'm fucking into it. Okay, so there's another name that we need to bring up, and I don't know how much we really want to talk about it because it sort of spoils a little bit of the magic of today's mm-hmm. double feature.
Jason Fleming.
No, I don't know if you know this name actually, which is why I'm treading carefully because Ooh. I think you may have... when we started this show, we didn't fucking know anything about movies. And now, I think you might be accidentally... I think you may have more instinctual knowledge than you even know you have.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you know how Forrest Gump and The Curious Case of Benjamin Button is like a wicked good double feature that you came up with?
Yeah.
And kind of how like the movies do some of the same stuff in a really strange way.
Uh-huh.
They make some of the same choices, but they're by two totally different directors.
Uh-huh.
These are both written by Eric Roth.
Oh my God.
Yeah, which is why they do a lot
That's
of the
hilarious.
Same weird thematic sort of things and also like ignore these troublesome things as if the author doesn't care about those and almost seem like...
So wait, Eric Roth was the screenwriter or the story writer?
He was the screenwriter for
okay,
these.
Okay, cool. Because these are based on, they're based on Double Sleepy Nap Time.
Yeah, on books. Or the uninitiated.
Sorry, I forgot what they were called.
That's a secret, not real podcast that we do about books called Double Sleepy Nap Time. He also wrote Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. Co-wrote A Star Is Born, I mean,
the newest A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
Gaga Cooper.
Which again, you know, talking about adaptations, right? So this is pre-existing material, but the way he writes it does have a very distinct, it has both a very distinct feeling to it, and he's got a certain sense of just the mechanisms for creating a dramatic blockbuster. You know, these movies fit so perfectly into mixing a lot of elements that seem impossible to mix, like doing both. Wait, look at Benjamin Button. It is high concept and a lengthy epic. I mean, it just seems like a fucking impossible task. And that's how, to some degree or another, how a lot of his movies are, where even, you know, something like Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, obviously this goes back to the source material, but that's a movie where the thing it is about is something you could see a trailer and then one person says to another and it has almost a viral quality. Have you seen this movie about this guy who ages in reverse? Is just a sort of natural hook to bring you to then this story.
Or drive me screaming in the other direction.
Right. Or make you think, you can't make a movie about that. It's impossible. I don't believe it. And walk away from it. What did you think they did for 3 hours? It's just like a 3-hour single take video of Fincher just like standing in a warehouse being like, how am I going to do this? How am I gonna? Looking at Brad Pitt? He's like, I don't know, dude. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know how we're going to do it. And then credits.
Yeah, I mean, that's not too far off. Nobody told me Tilda Swinton was in this movie, okay?
Tilda Swinton goes, guys, I've got it. Check this out. Yeah, or also we should say poor Cate Blanchett, who undergoes just as much age transformation, but because she does it in a chronological sense in the movie, she's literally doing all the heavy lifting that Brad Pitt is. But because Brad Pitt's scenes are in reverse order, people go, wow, this has just never been done before. A person going from old to young. This is crazy.
Shit.
And then the other character goes from young to old. And they're like, that's hacky tricks. We've seen that a million times. It's like, guys, it's literally just the sequence of,
yeah.
They don't actually have to like do it in their life.
Yeah, I mean, I guess another pair that I think Eric Roth would be devoid of being paired into. Maybe I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong. But we could have done Boyhood if we really wanted to hammer in how good are you at really nailing in age.
Boyhood, a crazy movie. We didn't, you know, we talked about that, I think, on additional content, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole production story that I recently learned behind that. Another story for another day, but sure. Just trying to, Boyhood's a movie where it was shot over, what, a decade or more?
A lifetime. Yeah.
And so I don't know if you knew this, but because of slave labor laws, you cannot keep a person under contract for that long.
Interesting.
So there's some interesting production
sure. Yeah.
Stories to that. But yeah, so, you know, he wrote Forrest Gump, Eric Roth did, I think in his 50s.
Damn.
So he's an older guy. So that means Benjamin Button would have had to be done.
Wait, 50s forward or 50s backward?
50s forward, man. Like normal
shit.
Human age.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I know. Crazy, right?
I was like, 50, so yeah, sure. So, I'm 50s backward right now.
You know, I mean, we've just been talking about some of his more recent movies, but that's, those are pretty big juggernauts to hit that late in life. And it seems so fitting. You know, that's why I wanted to talk about him a little bit as a writer in a movie that considers age so closely and talks about one of my favorite points in the whole movie. It's just these subtle little kind of understated things that the movie brings up along the way, leaves the audience with, and then they're, you know, the movie sort of lets them ponder that on their own without examining too much.
Mm-hmm.
But when there is the very deliberate moment of her turning to him and saying, is my age starting to bother you? And it's when his condition, up to this point, we've been just enjoying this like, whoa, what if a person aged backwards? This is so strange. And at a certain point, you get used to that. And then you start seeing the very deliberate aging of other people. Once you pass that halfway point, his condition begins to illuminate the average person through this kind of reflection.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer becomes a thing that we can't identify with. Now we're talking about, now we can identify with the movie. Halfway through the movie, we're looking at all the other characters getting older instead of an old person getting younger. And it becomes a little less about Benjamin Button. It kind of flips that to look at the audience a little bit more. And I think that's interesting coming from a guy who wrote this so late in his life. I think, you know, I've just been thinking about that a lot recently. Stan Lee just passed.
Yeah.
He didn't fucking make Spider-Man until he was 40. Created Spider-Man at 40. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, yeah, it's pretty nuts to think about somebody who would write movies that are this big of a blockbusters so late in their life. I feel like there's really a pile of these things that are worth more examining, but much like The Curious Case of Benjamin Button and the sequence of the montage sequence known as the film Forrest Gump, Double Feature 2 must just leave you with a bunch of ideas and then be like, I'm sorry, we have another appointment. We have to go. This is, your session is over. Look at the time. I do want to thank all the patrons for bringing this show to the masses. That is Abbott of Unreason, Ben Ecker, Brett Hayton, Charles Crawford, David Anderson, Mark Abbott, and Tom Leonard. You guys are the greatest. I hope you enjoyed having some giant mega movies that you've actually seen, and appreciate everybody listening to the show, even though we tell them they have to watch the movies first and then telling them to fuck off if they don't, and then just ignoring us and loving the show anyways. Thanks, guys.
Next week, we're going to cover two films that, I mean, okay, so listen, you've seen, none of you watched up for this week. We gave you a week off. Please do yourself a favor.
You think people just used their institutional knowledge of Forrest Gump and Benjamin
Button?
I'll
be honest, man. We don't talk enough about movies. If you've seen a movie once, you get the gist. The conversation comes from there.
Lazy.
Next week, we're doing two films that, I mean, watching back to back enriches the experience so much.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about The Contagiousness of Mania through the lens and the fog and the Vaseline smear of the 1990s.
This sounds hella pretentious. What are the two movies?
We're going to do some hella pretentious films. We're going to do 1994's Blown Away.
Okay, never mind. It's totally fine.
And we're gonna pair that with Fatal Attraction.
The 1990s movie, 1987's Fatal Attraction.
There you go.
I'll defend your position of Fatal Attraction as a 90s film way hard this time. Next episode on Double Feature.
All right, watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.